The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's stories include decision delayed on downtown south rezoning and effort to cut drug cost may stumble in court. And we'll begin with decision delayed on downtown south rezoning. The Raleigh Planning Commission has again delayed making a decision on a rezoning request for Downtown South, one of the largest proposed developments in the city's history, and will continue the debate into December. The developers have said they need a decision by January if they are to move forward with land purchases for the project. Discussions for the roughly 140-acre mixed-use development have largely surrounded the project's financing. The developers have asked the city to offer public funds through a tax increment grant, a public-private partnership financing method never before used in the city. The grant would use public funds for the development of the project and creation of community benefits, such as workforce development programs and affordable housing. Downtown South is proposed for the southern edge of downtown at South Sanders Street, South Wilmington Street, and Interstate 40. Kane Realty Corporation is requesting rezoning to build the sprawling development with high-rise residential and commercial buildings anchored by a sports and entertainment stadium. Developers and city staff spoke Thursday about financing as well as the project's plans to deal with stormwater, flooding, and effects on traffic during one of several special meetings held by the commission to review the project. City staff revised several conditions for the rezoning since an October 29th meeting. Reducing building height along Wilmington Street from 40 to 20 stories and from 5 stories on Gilbert Avenue off of South Sanders Street, restricting building in areas considered future flood hazard areas, reducing potential development area from 38 million square feet to 21.5 million, and dropping the number of future residential units to around 17,000 from roughly 33,000. Building up to 40 stories is permitted only in designated areas of the development. Bonner Gaylord, Managing Director of Operations for Kane Realty, said the company has been listening to the concerns surrounding potential environmental impacts from community groups such as Partners for Environmental Justice in Raleigh and Organized Neighbors for Empowerment Wake, or One Wake. We have added a number of conditions in response to their request to continue to discuss how Downtown South can be the absolute best for the community and how it can deliver on promises of equity when it comes to the environment and stormwater and housing and jobs, Gaylord said. A presentation from Partners for Environmental Justice called for negotiating a contract between the developers and the city or county to enforce community benefits once the project is approved by the city. They criticized a lack of specific development plans for parcels on the project site and asked how the development will affect traffic safety to a nearby residential area. Videos of recent stormwater flooding in the nearby Rochester Heights neighborhood were shown to emphasize the peril if flooding is not addressed. The Planning Commission will hold another virtual meeting on Downtown South at 4 p.m. on December 8th. People can watch the meeting or sign up to speak at www.raleighnc.gov/planning-commission. Commissioner Nicole Bennett once again criticized the project as being rushed through by developers who have set a January 11, 2021 deadline for recommendations to the City Council. The Commission will be able to call more special meetings ahead of that date. A transformational project requires a transformational process, not business as usual, she said. I resent being rushed in this process. It is too large of a project. Discussions are behind on a recommended project timeline from city planning staff. It originally listed November as the month for the Planning Commission to develop an outline for the tax increment grant agreement and for the City Council to appoint a community engagement committee. The City Council is slated to vote on the rezoning recommendation for Downtown South in December, according to the proposed timeline from city staff. And next, Education Corps seeks tutors to help students hurt by learning loss. North Carolina is recruiting 200 people to work in 18 school districts across the state, including Wake and Durham counties, to help students who've been hard hit by the coronavirus pandemic. The new North Carolina Education Corps is recruiting people who are willing to commit at least 10 to 15 hours a week for 6 months, starting in January, doing things like tutoring and mentoring students. Corps members will be paid at least $13.15 an hour to work either part-time or full-time and either remotely or in person in schools. The priority application deadline is Sunday, although applications will be accepted through December 7th. Organizers will pick people in December to train them before they start working with the school districts in January. The pandemic has really stressed our ability to stay connected with individual students, Eric Davis, chairman of the State Board of Education, said in an interview Friday. We're confident that the Education Corps will provide talented North Carolinians to support our teachers in connecting with our students and caring for their needs in the pandemic. The program is a joint project of the State Board of Education, Governor Roy Cooper's office, American Ripples, and local school districts. It was begun because of the learning struggles students have faced since the start of the coronavirus pandemic. All of the state's public schools shut down for in-person instruction in March and switched to remote learning. Many school districts have resumed in-person instruction, but some students are getting no or only limited in-person instruction. Schools across the state and nation have reported higher numbers of students failing classes compared to last year. For instance, 25% of Wake County middle school and high school students failed at least one class during the first quarter of this year, up from 15% last school year. In tough times, North Carolinians pull together to help each other out, and this pandemic is no different, Cooper said in a news release Friday. The North Carolina Education Corps gives people a wonderful opportunity to help in local public schools at a time when students and educators really need it. The program is open to anyone who is at least 18 years old and who has at least a high school diploma. Davis said North Carolinians of all ages should apply, including retired educators and retirees in general. But college students and recent graduates experiencing financial strain or loss of employment are expected to be especially interested in the program. Davis, who hopes to continue the Corps past the pandemic, said the program could serve as a residency for people who are considering becoming educators. The program is hoping to attract different groups, including people of color. This comes at a time when the majority of North Carolina public school students are from minority groups, but more than 80% of teachers are white. If the goal of this thing is to connect with students, the more we connect them with people who have similar life experiences, the greater the potential it will be lasting and stronger, Davis said. In addition to tutoring, other jobs could include providing technology support, helping school counselors, and coordinating volunteers at schools. Corps members who work in schools will have to follow the same safety guidelines required for people who are on campuses. This includes wearing a face mask, passing a daily temperature check, and health screening, and maintaining social distancing with students. Of the 200 positions in Wake County school system, we'll get 70 people, and Durham Public Schools will get 20. Wake County will use the positions in low-performing and Title I elementary schools, according to Mike Chappell, the district's senior director for talent acquisition. He said these newly hired school support specialists will work 30 hours a week providing in-person reading and math support to K through 2 students. Wake will pay the support specialist using coronavirus relief money provided by the governor's office. Chappell said that money permitting, Wake wants to continue working with the program next school year as well. "We were pleased that we were accepted into the inaugural group," Chappell said in an interview Friday. "We hope we can find 70 people and get them into the schools." Next, effort to cut drug cost may stumble in court. Health officials on Friday finalized a policy that would base the price Medicare pays for certain drugs on the lowest price paid in some other developed nations. It is the most ambitious of several drug pricing rules issued in the final months of President Donald Trump's term, but is likely to be vulnerable to legal challenges. Trump has spoken for years about the idea, which he calls most favored nation. It would guarantee the United States the best price available among groups of developed countries for 50 expensive drugs it buys for Medicare beneficiaries. In a news conference Friday afternoon announcing the rule, he said it would transform the way the U.S. government pays for drugs to end global freeloading on the backs of American citizens and American patients. "The idea is anathema to the pharmaceutical industry, which has fought hard against any price controls on its products and has advertised heavily against the policy. And it runs counter to the policy preferences of lawmakers in Trump's own party. Just last year, most Republicans on the Senate Finance Committee, which oversees Medicare, voted to prevent the administration from pursuing a weaker version of the same idea. But Trump has always been an outlier in his party on drug prices, aligning himself more closely with ideas that are mainstream among Democrats. He campaigned in 2016 on allowing Medicare to negotiate directly with drug companies on prices, an option that Republicans in Congress prohibited when they established Medicare's prescription drug benefit in 2003. The policy shares some features with a bill passed by House Democrats last year, which would also tie the prices paid for some drugs to those paid by other nations. His proposal is a break from the Republican orthodoxy," said Rachel Sachs, an associate professor of law at Washington University in St. Louis, who call the regulation an extremely big deal rhetorically. But she, like several drug policy experts, warned that a rushed regulatory process meant the proposal faced a high risk of being overturned in court after the industry inevitably sued. Trump on Friday hinted at the possibility the rule may not survive. "I just hope they keep it," he said. "I hope they have the courage to keep it because the powerful drug lobby, Big Pharma, is putting pressure on people like you wouldn't believe." It was unclear whether Trump was referring to the courts or the administration of President-elect Joe Biden. The president at one point incorrectly said he had won the election. The proposal is possible under a provision of the Affordable Care Act that allows Medicare to test policy ideas that improve patient care and save money, but it is highly unusual because it would be established as a national mandatory demonstration program. Most such projects have been set up as either voluntary or mandatory for only a random fraction of health providers in order to study their effects. A few types of safety net in cancer hospitals are exempted. The demonstration would last 7 years and feature a 4-year phase-in of the price changes. Next, spending bill snags on dispute over VA funding. Congressional efforts to pass a $1.4 trillion spending bill funding the federal government before a December 11th shutdown deadline may be in trouble after new demands from the Trump administration. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin on Friday demanded cuts to domestic spending as part of the bill, which could jeopardize the ability of Congress to complete the measure, according to people familiar with the situation. Mnuchin and the White House have raised an objection to a plan by Senate Republicans and House Democrats to exempt $12.5 billion in Veteran Affairs funding from the $1.4 trillion budget cap established in a 2019 debt ceiling deal Mnuchin struck with Congress, the people said. The funding is required for expanded health care for veterans under the VA Mission Act, passed in 2018. If the money isn't exempted from the budget cap, Congress would need to find $7 billion in cuts to other domestic spending this year, something Democrats oppose. If the dispute hardens into an impasse, it could stymie the ability of Congress to pass a giant 4-year funding bill next month, the people said. The U.S. has been operating on stopgap funding since fiscal 2021 began on October 1st. Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell want to complete an omnibus bill to provide stable funding for the federal government through September 30th. At this point, talks between the House and Senate Appropriations Committee await resolution of the VA funding issue. Only then can an outline for all 12 parts of the omnibus be completed, and talks on program-level disputes such as President Donald Trump's border wall be entertained. The White House and Treasury didn't immediately respond to requests for comment. The push on VA funding was first reported by The Washington Post. Next, Europeans split on lockdown essentials. The concept of what is essential to keep a society functioning during coronavirus lockdowns is gripping Europe as the pandemic unleashes death, poverty, illness, and isolation. Beyond obvious candidates like food stores and pharmacies, some answers in the patchwork of nations and cultures that make up Europe can approach the surreal. An activity or item considered essential in one country can be off limits across the border, just a brief stroll down the road. German Chancellor Angela Merkel said that while it might seem fairest to just shut everything down, it's perhaps not the most practical solution. If people are only satisfied when everything possible is shut down, then that's a view which naturally doesn't make economic sense, Merkel said. That's why Germany is keeping car dealerships open this time, after their closure in the first spring lockdown hurt the country's huge automobile industry. In Belgium, of course, chocolate shops are staying open. Chocolate is very much an essential food around here, said chocolatier Marlene van Vulsum at the Praline Chocolatiere south of Brussels. It has to be because chocolate makes you happy. Happiness would seem no subject to split hairs about. Neither would safety, as infection numbers are setting global records. A total of 600,000 confirmed daily cases were reported worldwide for the first time Friday, after having reached 500,000 for the first time on October 26. Yet consider how differently Italy and Britain treat a service that gladdens many a heart in the country that coined the term bella figura, the art of cutting a fine figure. Hairdressers are deemed essential. Italians really care about their image and about wellness, said Charity Che, the Milan-based co-founder of Tony and Guy Italy. Perhaps psychologically, the government may feel that going to a salon is a moment of release from the stress and tension, a moment of self-care that citizens need. But across England, people have had to scramble to get their hair done in the last days and hours while they still could, before new pandemic restrictions came into force on Thursday. The thought of another lockdown and being stuck at home, people thought, I'm going to throw caution to the wind, and I'm just going to come in and have my hair done, said Richard Ward, managing director at the Richard Ward Hair and Metro Spa on London's Swank Sloane Square. And then there are life's finer pleasures. In France, the love of books is unquestioned. No country has more Nobel Prize winners in literature. And a book review program on TV like Apostrophes used to be watched by millions every week. But walk the streets of Paris and you will find bookshops closed. Sylvia Whitman, who runs the famed Shakespeare & Company bookstore on the Left Bank, seethes at the prospect of giant online platforms gobbling up business while her shop is shuttered. Her sales have dropped 80% since the spring lockdown. I find it really tiring that the bigger you are, the more you can ignore laws. You can avoid taxes. You can find loopholes, she said. The smaller you are, the more expensive and the more complicated things are. Across the border in Belgium, books were deemed essential. Even then, Wouter Cajot, owner of the Stad Liest in the port of Antwerp, finds it a mixed blessing. The lockdown has reduced passing shoppers to a trickle, and he will have to decide whether heating and personnel costs make it worth his staying open. But when essential goods cannot be bought in a store, they can still be delivered. During the first lockdown, we had to invent a website in 3 days and nights, said Cajot, and he got new logistical equipment, a cargo bike, to the delight of his Antwerp clients who get books delivered within hours of placing their order. So why order books in an international online giant when the corner bookstore can deliver same day by bike? That's also become a question of government policy. With small shops often forced to suspend operations and drifting closer to bankruptcy as a result, the door is wide open for supermarket chains and online giants to pounce. Several countries have taken steps to ensure supermarkets during lockdown cannot sell many products that provide the livelihood of closed shops. It can get very complicated, with some supermarkets forced to tape off sections of their merchandise. In Belgium, Christmas decorations, which took weeks to set up, may now be hidden from view, since retail stores cannot sell them as they are deemed non-essential. Books and magazines are allowed, said Harry Decron, manager of a Care For department west of Brussels. DVDs, CDs, and games are not allowed. Sewing equipment is allowed. Stationery is allowed. Garden equipment can be sold. Pots and pans, toys, and Christmas supplies are not allowed. Just as toys would seem essential for children, Pertanqui, France's traditional outdoor game that involves mostly elderly players tossing metal balls with leisurely accuracy, might be considered a must for the country's retirees. There is nothing quite like the Pertanqui grounds of the Provençal village of Saint-Paul-de-Vence, where the likes of actors Yves Montand and Lino Ventura would click their balls on the dirt. Now they're deserted, as the government opined that the Pertanique is not essential. It's a leisure activity we can do without, said Sandrine Leonard, who manages the local tourism information center. Now that dead leaves provide the color of the sun usually does, it's more a period to stay quietly at home, to do some cooking. We spend less time outdoors, hence the importance of having a good book. But wait, bookshops are closed. And next, some financial tips from the AARP Bulletin. How to reset your cash flow. How do I know if I'm in serious financial trouble? Sometimes it's hard to face up to the shaky state of one's finances. Here are five signs you might be struggling. If any apply to you, it's probably time to seek help and take action. Number one, you've started using one credit card to pay off another card, or are making only the minimum monthly payments. Number two, your rainy day fund is shrinking and your savings account balance is dropping. You've started getting collection notices and past due bills. Number four, you're delaying needed home maintenance, doctor appointments, or car repairs. And number five, you dread getting the mail and you won't pick up your calls because you suspect they are from creditors. If I need to cut spending, how do I figure out where to start? Well, the 10-minute approach. Pull out your banking and credit card statements, and that's the month when the lockdown hit in April. Much of the country and people stopped traveling, eating out, and socializing. If the lockdown didn't hit your area until later, use May or June statements instead. Then compare that month's spending to August when things started to open up. Look at the difference. All that extra stuff in August statements you can probably live without. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.